My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
It is essential that our team learns to work with our new recruit, not against him.
I'm a geek, walking down the street.
Check the computer.
The mainframe computer.
I access the mainframe.
At the end of this day, one shall stand, one shall fall.
Time to find out.
Welcome to Basically a Geek Show. Here are your hosts, Mike and Jack.
And welcome to what I think is episode 9 of Hi. Basically a Geek Show. My name's Mike, this is Jack, and we're here for what looks to be a very special episode due to some recent reveals from Blizzard Entertainment, but we'll get to that in due time. Jack, anything you want to say before we kick things off?
Not really. Though he means special as in like different, not as in like, you know, those preachy after school specials where we told you not to do drugs.
No.
We really don't care if you're like injecting crack into your fucking eyeballs right now. We really don't.
In fact, as a general rule of thumb, we're usually at least half in the bag when we do this show, so we're probably not one to preach abstinence and clean living. But anyway, let's get to it. We're going to start on a mature and not juvenile at all topic. So we've been talking about BotCon a lot over the past couple of shows as reveals and exclusives have come up and guest announcements have been made. But there's another Transformers convention. You see, BotCon is the official Transformers convention, and it's usually – well, it's always held in the United States, usually in California. Sometimes they come to the Midwest or Eastern Coast. But it's usually in California, usually in Pasadena. The odd exception, you'll sometimes get Texas. There is a there is an unofficial Transformers convention that is held in Toronto. Well, Mississauga, technically, but the greater Toronto area. And it is Canada's largest Transformers convention. It is called TFCon. And Hasbro stopped, showing up as FunPub, the company that runs BotCon, sort of complained that they were the only ones who deserved Hasbro representation because they were the official convention. But, you know, it's still a fun time, still a great convention. I've never been to a BotCon, but I've been to plenty of TFCons, and I have enjoyed myself at every one of them. But like BotCon, TFCon has exclusives. But being unofficial, they can't get their hands on official Hasbro molds. They can't have access to official Hasbro production factories. So what they do is they go to these third-party companies, these companies that make third-party toys, and they say, hey, we like this third-party toy. Could you repaint it into a character of our creation as an exclusive? And here's where I get into the mature and not juvenile at all part. This year's exclusive is a repaint of a third-party Huffer toy. If I can just bring that up, it seems to be the X-Transbots Crank, which is a third-party Huffer toy. But it has been repainted in a yellow, silver, and red color scheme as Masterpiece Shafter. Masterpiece Shafter being the unofficial, homage to the, I'm totally not kidding you, Transformers character named Erector.
Who, for some reason, was not voted into the Transformers Hall of Fame. I don't know why. It's a clear choice. Anyone should have been able to be like, yeah, fucking Erector. Totally.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
There is no justice in the world. There is none.
What, sir? I did my part. I voted for Erector multiple times.
I bet you did.
I did. So, yeah, a couple years back for BotCon, they did a Transformers Hall of Fame thing where they inducted a set of characters and then they opened up one induction slot to a fan vote. And enough fans got behind the joke of inducting this obscure official Transformer named Erector. And surprise, surprise, he didn't win. I claim foul play. I think he won that fan vote, and Hasbro denied the will of the people. They denied the voice of the masses.
It was Susan Boyle all over again.
Indeed. So, of course, the next BotCon, TFCon, the next TFCon after that BotCon is when they repainted a smaller Huffer third-party toy as Shafter. The homage to Erector, and now Shafter is getting a masterpiece level exclusive release at TFCon. I will be there July 11th to the 13th, 2014 in Mississauga.
So how many are you going to buy?
I'm thinking at least five. I need five Shafters.
You need at least five Shafters.
I need five Shafters to really feel fulfilled.
Yeah, you need five Shafters to fill you, definitely.
And, you know, there is that gaping hole inside of me that just it needs to be filled. So,
and Shafter is there for that need, indeed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's masterpiece Shafter. On a slightly more serious note,
thought we weren't serious.
I'm not sure if I'm actually going to pick one of these guys up. They tend to be expensive, and, you know, this is a third-party toy. These third-party toys are already expensive. So
but it's Shafter. I mean, it's a dick joke that you can put on display, and people can come and they can see it, and as opposed to what generally – the opposite order of what generally happens. And no one has to really know except you. Like, you know, your friends could come over, hey, man, nice Transformer. Thanks. You know, thumbs up. And thinking, ha-ha, you complimented my dick joke. You
know? Or I could, you know, bring people over. I'd be like, I could, like, give them the tour of my place and be like, and this is Masterpiece Shafter. He's an homage to the character Erector as he stands proudly on display.
Something about your tone of voice when you said that just made me I almost threw up a little in my mouth. I almost did.
Mission accomplished. Mission accomplished.
And it looks like TFCon's not the only one unveiling exclusives.
No, they are not. They are not. BotCon, the official Transformers convention, brought to you by the good folks at Fun Pub, who are very good folks, so long as they are not leaking your credit card information to online financial predators.
They are continuing their onslaught of mediocrity.
Yes, so we've been talking about this Pirate versus Knight BotCon exclusive set. And if you followed our discussions through these various episodes where we've talked about unveilings, you might have picked up a pattern. That being that with each successive unveiling, the exclusives in the Pirate versus Knight BotCon set have become less piratey and less knighty.
Those are words, by the way, people.
They are now. I have just injected them into the lexicon. But, so we start off with Cannonball, who is, all the credit in the world, very piratey. They nailed it. No argument there. He's followed up by Farrakh, who looks like a generic red and white Decepticon, who happens to have pirate emblems on his wings, on his jet mode. All right. He's followed by the first quote-unquote knight, Autobot Knight, who is Devcon, who was an homage to an Autobot bounty hunter from the G1 cartoon. His toy has no defining features that would point to him being a knight, and he doesn't even use the Autobot Knight emblem. And now, following up on that, is the last figure in the pirate side of things, just released last night, actually. And it is Scorponok. It is a repaint of Energon Scorponok in Generation 1 colors. And that's about it. He has no pirate insignia. And he's just you on Scorponok, who was not a pirate.
So, if you want a G1 repainted Scorponok, go for it. If you're expecting anything special or anything evoking anything of a pirate in this Pirates versus Knights set, well, FunPub is telling you to go fuck yourself and give them your money.
Yeah. I'm convinced now that they had one idea for this set, and that was Cannonball, because Cannonball is an homage to a well-received Cybertron repaint from back in 2005-2006. And everyone loved Cannonball then, and I'm convinced that they just said, we should do Cannonball. Well, how can we justify doing Cannonball? Let's do a pirate set. We can't just do pirates. Well, let's do Pirates versus Knights. Yeah, that sounds cool. Okay, so Cannonball's the first figure. Who else? And then Crickets. And then they just started filling up the set with random characters. Now, if you want a G1 repaint of Energon Scorponok, if you want a DevCon figure, I mean, there are markets for those figures, but, you know, I was kind of looking forward to the whole pirate versus knight thing, and so far, out of the five figures revealed so far, only one has really tied into that theme. So, four figures revealed so far. Only one's tied into that theme, so I don't know. You know,
yeah.
I feel like Jeff Goldblum. Again, I feel like Jeff Goldblum here. Like, are you going to have Pirates and Knights in your Pirates and Knights-themed BotCon set?
I really hate that man. But yeah, I mean, they're okay. You know, we're not knocking the actual toys themselves. If you're wanting a DevCon or if you're wanting any of these particular characters done up the way that they're done, then by all means, you know, they don't seem to have anything wrong with them.
I don't think anyone wanted a Farrakh toy, though. Farrakh's only contribution to the franchise is showing up in the comics to die as a background character.
Well, if you're into red shirts, I mean, you know. But if you're actually someone that going into this, like, you know, Mike did, thinking Pirates and Knights would be cool, and I was in on the knight side of things, I'm like, oh, you know, Autobot Paladin, that'd be pretty fucking sweet. And then, you know, they're all like, oh, well, you know, we kind of decided to go ahead and not do that, except there's still Pirates and Knights, go fuck yourself, give us your money. Then, yeah, you're probably going to be kind of disappointed by what you're seeing here.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I mean, there's still one more knight to be unveiled, and then that'll be the set. I'm holding out hope that they really knock it out of the park, that they really give us a really cool Autobot knight. And if they do that, if they give us a really good Autobot knight, it just might be enough to make me go, eh, it was worth it. But
now, do these have to be purchased as a set?
Yes, these five in particular do.
That's going to be a pretty decent chunk of change.
North of $300.
Yeah.
North of is usually what these things go for. You can get them. You don't even have to go to BotCon to get them. There are packages where they reserve a certain amount for people who just want to buy the sets. But that's only for these five. There will probably be two packs, a freebie, and one three-pack of exclusive figures coming out at the convention. And those, of course, will give them more opportunities to expand on this Pirate versus Knight theme, although you'd think that if they had some really cool Pirate versus Knight characters, they would be featured in the Pirate versus Knight set, but...
No. Fuck you. No. No.
So, we usually get a good look at the other exclusives outside of the five-part box set the closer we get to BotCon. And that's coming in June or July. I'm not sure. I never go to BotCon. You know, travel to the States and whatnot. So I never.
Yeah, you hate our Belgians.
Oh, they make delicious waffles.
You hate them so bad you don't even want us to have them.
You know, they make delicious waffles.
Racist.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I never go to BotCon, so the date always eludes me. I know it's in the summer. BotCon and TFCon are usually pretty close. TFCon is from the 11th to the 13th of July, so I'd expect BotCon to be either a week before or after. They rarely run on the same weekend because, well, they tend to draw a lot of the same crowd. Anything else you want to say on BotCon exclusive, totally not pirate Scorponok?
I mean, you know, I've always thought Scorponok was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so, I mean, if you're looking to just get one, then go for it. I don't see it being a set seller.
Yeah, I mean, and there are ways to get these individually. What a lot of people do, people go to BotCon and...
And break them up.
Yeah, they break them up. So if you're interested in any of the particulars of this set, I'd actually hold off because as soon as BotCon starts, they're going to hit eBay at hugely inflated prices. If you wait a couple days, those prices start to come down. Because, you know, they're new and people are like, I must have it now. I don't care what the price is.
But give me or take my money.
Pretty much, yeah. So, you know, there are ways to get your hands on the individual ones, but no official way. In fact, you can still buy official product. You can still buy sets from previous years. But even when dealing with previous year's sets, FunPub will only sell them as a set.
Now, here's what you do, because the only one that I really see a lot of people maybe going for might be Cannonball. Mm-hmm. And maybe DevCon, I mean, fifth release pending. If you want a DevCon at least, here's what you do. Just go out and get the fucking, Generation Scourge?
Mm-hmm.
Just get it. Get that and get you, I don't know, an alcoholic beverage of your choice. Get a lot of it. And then drink a lot of said beverage.
Until Scourge starts to look like DevCon?
No, that's half-assing it. Fuck no, no. And then get you some paint.
Oh, God.
Take the bitch apart and have at her.
Basically, a Geek
what
Show
possibly
does.
What go wrong? Basically, no, we totally endorse it.
Basically,
totally
Geek Show does not endorse drunken customization.
We do. We totally do. We totally fucking do.
So, moving on the Transformers related news, we have sadly no new Age of Extinction news as of yet. We're kind of still in that early trailer zone, although I will say that apparently due to a stocking error, some Age of Extinction toys have been put on shelves in Walmarts throughout Ontario. I have not seen any, but apparently they are out there. But that's all the Age of Extinction news we've got for you this week. But there is a Transformers video game. It was an MMO. Now it's a MOBA.
No.
It's not a MOBA. No.
It's a MOTA. Multi-online tactical assholes arena.
So, but MOBA is multiple online battle arena.
Well, if you don't think, I mean, if you actually think that shooting guns back and forth implies a battle, then you're just fucking retarded. I mean, it's clear that once you have a gun, you're not battling. You're tacticaling. And,
yeah.
You know, so, of course, this is a multi-online tactical arena, according to Jagex, whatever the fuck they call themselves.
Jagex, I think, is the term.
So, yeah, this is it's a MOTA. MOTA.
Yeah. Yeah, this game has gone through so many identity issues, and now it seems as if they want to jump on that League of Legends bandwagon, but they don't want to actually call it a MOBA, because perhaps MOBA has a a negative stigma due to the League of Legends player base, so we're getting a MOTA, but it's basically a MOBA. They've given us previews for two characters that will be featured in this game. You want to give us a rundown on those, Jack?
Well, these are actually two additional previews. They've done a couple more, but which we did cover those on a previous show, but I really couldn't be arsed to remember them. Mm-hmm. They are, these new ones are Female Bumblebee and Decepticon
Bulkhead.
Bulkhead. Catapult, which is basically a female version of Bumblebee that transforms into a dune buggy, and Shellshock, which is the Decepticon Bulkhead. And really, there's honestly not much else to say about these characters beyond Female Bumblebee and Decepticon Bulkhead. That's really all there is to either of them.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, indeed. These have absolutely no characterization really behind them. They are not from any previous part of the franchise, no fiction associated with them. They're created just for the game. But if anything else, they kind of do show that there will be cool graphics and effects to accompany this thing. But these cool character trailers aside, I can't bring myself to care. When they first announced there's going to be a Transformers MMO, I was like, hell yeah, I'm there. And then they announced it was browser-based, and I caught it, got weary. And then they announced it was delayed. And then it announced it wasn't even an MMO, it was a MOTA. And now...
MOTA!
And with each release, I get less and less psyched for it. And at this point, I don't even care. Like, I just don't. The graphics look nice. I mean, it looks like it'll be cool to get in there and just mess some stuff up with, you know, the bot of your choosing. But I don't know. These look very standard. You got like the female bee who's small, quick, uses a sniper rifle, it appears. And then you've got the big Decepticon brute, the Decepticon Bulkhead guy, real name Shellshock, who is just, he's got like the heavy guns and the rockets, and it looks cool, but it's stuff I've seen a million times before, and it just seems so generic, and it seems so heartless, it seems such like a blatant cash grab, because it was an MMO when World of Warcraft was hot. And then they changed it to a MOTA when League of Legends was hot, so...
MOBA! I mean, MOTA!
So I just don't care. How about you, Jack?
If I get into the beta, I'll play it for... I'll give it 2 hours of gameplay. I'll give it 2 hours to show me why it's not the burning waste of time that it appears to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then, of course, when I do so, if I get to do so, you know, we'll discuss it here on the show. Barring that, you know, I'll try it when it goes live, if it ever goes live. And, you know, I'll give it that 2 hours of gameplay then to show me why it doesn't suck. I'm not expecting much.
Breaking news. Transformers Universe has been delayed. It will be reconfigured into a Minesweeper clone.
Well, you know, Candy Crush is pretty fucking popular right now. I'm just saying.
Transformers, Energon Crush.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, God. I hope no one from Jagex is listening.
Oh, you know, it's like, oh, you know, League of Legends is kind of old hat. What's the new thing that we can reinvent this game to look like?
If we get on TFW at any point in the next couple weeks and we see that it's becoming like a fucking Facebook puzzle game, I'm blaming you. I'm blaming you. I'm not saying that this is being a big loss, that we're not getting this. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that if we get a fucking puzzle game out of this, I'm blaming you.
I am Mike, Destroyer of Worlds.
That's my line, except, well, of course, not being Mike. because I'm not Mike, but yeah.
All right.
Stop stealing my shtick.
Moving on from the world Transformers for now. Hopefully we'll get some Age of Extinction news at some point because, you know, I like talking about Marky Mark and his shenanigans.
Well, we don't – well, I mean, you know, what you're saying, we'd rather just find out what kind of toilet paper they're using on set or anything like that. I mean, because evidently that's considered news, that kind of shit. One time seen a fuck, and this is considered news, talking about what kind of cameras they were using.
Yeah, I don't care.
Who the fuck cares?
I really don't care about the technical side of filmmaking. I know some people do. I really don't. When it comes to filmmaking, I just want to be entertained by the final product.
The other thing is, those people probably would have already found out by different ways or already known, basically, you know, would have assumed, if not before production, then surely after once they've seen it. Whatever.
Indeed. But yes, moving on from Transformers, I caught a movie actually today, and this is a great opportunity to talk about it because it's fresh in my mind. I just saw it. It is just blanked on me. Oh, that shows you how fresh it was. Lol. It's Captain America the Winter Soldier. I just saw that.
Move, X-Lax.
Yeah, I know. But yes, I just saw that today. Captain America, the Winter Soldier, the sequel to Captain America, the First Avenger, and I guess, yeah, in a lot of ways, a sequel to the Avengers. So
is this like what, Loki part four?
No, thankfully, okay. Loki doesn't even appear directly. There's a hint of Loki in the after credits trailer.
So they can't even make one movie without some Loki somewhere in it.
Yes. There is a tiny bit of Loki in this. And you know what? I admit Tom Hiddleston does a great job as Loki. The character, in a vacuum, I have no problem with Loki, but it's getting to be a bit much, guys. It's getting to be a bit much. You know, I'm an Iron Man fan. We can't even have the Mandarin in one full movie, but Loki's in four now. So, you know, I'm never letting this go. I am never going to let this go.
Never again.
Unless they make this up to me with a very awesome Iron Man 4, I am never letting this go. but yeah, Loki is in, he's not even in the after credit sequence. His scepter from the Avengers is. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I guess the best way to discuss this, because I just don't want to go into a huge spiel on the movie. Do you have any questions about it?
Well, basically, I mean, for those who may not have heard much about it or may not be familiar with the series, what is the basic overall plot line, and how does this tie into, say, the Avengers, and does anything kind of help lead up to Avengers 2?
Okay, so Captain America, the basic premise, he's a wimpy kid from the 40s, wants to join World War II to fight the Nazis, but, of course, he's really weak. I think he has asthma, you know, he's not exactly a fighting specimen, so he's denied entry into the army, which is kind of sad when you think about, like, the army wouldn't even take you as a meat shield.
Yeah.
But, he gets kind of earmarked for this U.S. Army scientific experiment to use a serum to create super soldiers. It's used on him, turns him into this. It turns him into. They describe him as the peak of human ability. So he is the fastest a human could possibly go. He is the strongest a human could possibly be. So he's not super strong. He's just the peak of human potential, and he fights in World War II. Defeats Hydra, who is it's kind of the Nazis' secret science department. That makes it sound really lame. It's a department. Nah, it's a Nazi secret science organization. In the first movie, he fights Hydra, defeats the Red Skull, played by Hugo Weaving, one of my favorite actors, who sadly will probably not be returning because apparently he had a piss-poor experience filming that movie. But then he's frozen as a result of his fight with the Red Skull. He's frozen in the Arctic, and he's revived in the modern day just in time for the Avengers team up. Captain America Winter Soldier is interesting. It takes place 2 years after the Avengers. Captain America is still working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and he's kind of having a hard time struggling. He's struggling with his role in S.H.I.E.L.D. because, you know, the world's changed since the 40s. The world, World War II was very black and white. Nazis are evil. The United States.
Not according to Mountain Dew.
The Nazis are evil. Western allies are good. And yeah, there's a bit of a moral ambiguity because it is war, but you know, still the sides are very clear cut. In the modern era, Steve Rogers, who is Captain America, is having a hard time adjusting because things are a lot more gray. Nick Fury, the head of S.H.I.E.L.D., is kind of withholding need to know information from him. He doesn't feel right in this new era, but you know, he's been a soldier for so long. Well, that's what he's used to. That's all he knows. And you know, he's Captain America. His one marketable skill is being physically stronger and faster. So outside of being a soldier, there's not much he could, I guess he could be a sports star, but then that's, he'd probably get tagged for steroids. So that's probably out. So he's kind of having this self-identity crisis, which is actually really well done. It's never really overbearing, but it's present just enough to really give him some character. And then it comes back, and then the plot sort of circles around to the Winter Soldier. The Winter Soldier is, well, spoiler alert, Bucky Barnes. Bucky Barnes was Steve Rogers' best friend growing up. They enlisted in the army together. And Bucky Barnes is the only member of Steve Rogers' team who actually died over the course of the first movie. Or so we thought he died. He was actually picked up by Hydra, who has augmented him with brainwashing. He's got a robotic arm. And it's hinted that he has a bit of the Super Soldier serum stuff working for him too. And he becomes the Winter Soldier, Hydra's expert assassin. And that's pretty, and so that's pretty much the backdrop to Captain America the Winter Soldier.
Well, first off, I mean, I'd have a hard time taking anybody named Bucky seriously as a threat.
I think his first name is James. His middle name's Buchanan, so he's Bucky.
I mean, Bucky O'Hare notwithstanding, of course, but yeah. So is there anything in this movie that kind of sets any kind of tone up for Avengers 2?
Not a lot, actually. A few bits. But really, the whole thing is more, it's got a lot of aesthetic elements that really make it an homage to 1970s political thrillers. And reading up on the film, that's kind of what they were going for. Robert Redford is cast as Alexander Pierce, who I believe is Secretary of Defense in the Marvel Universe. They kind of change his role up. In the comics, he's just Nick Fury's advisor and one of the senior leadership personnel of S.H.I.E.L.D. In this movie, he's the villain. They reveal throughout the course of the movie that Hydra, the Nazi evil science division, they survived World War II. And when the U.S. brought over all those Nazi scientists, you know, to help with U.S. Army experiments, to help with the space program, for instance, the movie implies that Hydra came over with those scientists and that Hydra's been operating essentially in secret within S.H.I.E.L.D. since S.H.I.E.L.D.'s foundation. Since S.H.I.E.L.D.'s founding following World War II. And they are kind of staging this massive plan within S.H.I.E.L.D. to take over the world, as it were.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now, we talked about this on an earlier show that
yeah, Redford spilling the beans.
Robert Redford kind of hinting that Robert Redford not only admitting that his character was a villain, which is a spoiler because Alexander Pierce is usually not a villain, but there was also a leak from the Captain America Winter Soldier soundtrack that implied that Alexander Pierce, Robert Redford's character, would be the Red Skull. And this made sense because, you know, with Hugo Weaving deciding not to return, it would make sense to recast the Red Skull because he is Captain America's most visible, most famous adversary. But he's not. Robert Redford's character, Alexander Pierce, is not shown to be the Red Skull in this movie. I kept waiting for it to happen. I kept waiting for the moment when he'd rip off the mask and he'd be the Red Skull, but it doesn't happen. Alexander Pierce is just Alexander Pierce. It just so happens that in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, he's an asshole.
So then what would be up with the deal from the soundtrack then? I mean, is this something you think we're going to find out later he is Red Skull, or is this just fucking, they're just fucking with us, or what?
Well, the soundtrack that was leaked had a track listing that said Alexander Pierce is the Red Skull. That's the name of that piece of music. But he's not. It's possible that it was cut, that maybe he was planned to be the Red Skull in an earlier version of the film, but they reworked it for whatever reason.
Do you recall what the source of that leak was? Because it sounds kind of like a bit of a trolling attempt. I mean, who would name a musical score, a segment of a musical score, Alexander Pierce is the Red Skull?
Well, movie tracks tend to work that way because they're not really intended for mass consumption, so you don't need catchy song titles. In a lot of movie soundtrack cases, individual songs are labeled by the plot points of the movie that they match up to.
All right, fair enough.
So, you know, that never really raised any red flags for me. I don't know. But yeah, in this movie, Alexander Pierce is just simply the head of the Hydra infiltration within S.H.I.E.L.D. He's not shown to be the Red Skull, and I don't, honestly, you know, I thought maybe after the movie ended, I thought, you know, did it suffer for him not being the Red Skull? Would him being Red Skull have made it better? And I actually concluded that it wouldn't have, honestly, like, it wouldn't have been a detriment, if he would have been the Red Skull, it wouldn't have made it worse, but I didn't feel like it's his presence was lacking in any way. Alexander Pierce as sort of just a Hydra plant kind of worked on its own and kind of added to that 70s spy thriller, political thriller kind of theme, because he's a mole. He's been in the State Department for decades, and he's been slowly building towards this end goal.
Plus, it helps boost their numbers among the over 50 female demographic.
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, you got to get those Robert Redford fans in there.
Both of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Robert Redford, I'm sorry. He did a fine job.
He's a good actor. He's a good actor.
He's a good actor. He's pretty good in this movie. He doesn't disappoint. But honestly, I could not have told you the last movie that Robert Redford was in. When I first saw the trailer for Captain America the Winter Soldier and I saw Robert Redford in it, I was like, really? I thought he was retired.
Oh, I actually remember. I remember the first and only Robert Redford movie I've ever seen. And I was a teenager. I got drugged to it on a date.
Mm.
And it was called Up Close and Personal. It had one of those god-awful Celine Dion soundtracks that was so prevalent at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, what you won't go through to get laid, I swear. And I didn't. I didn't even. So not only did I have to sit through this fucking chick flick and listen to Celine Dion fart into a microphone for however long
my
the soundtrack.
Love will shut go up. Up.
Four crimes. Shut the fuck up. No. Bad touch. Yeah, didn't even get laid. But yeah.
Yeah, you know, Robert Redford, and, you know, I'm surprised I got him, because when you think of comic book movies, Robert Redford is not someone who comes to mind. But, well, you know, he did it, and he did a good job. Trying to think, in terms of Avengers 2, well, one, the Winter Soldier subplot is actually unresolved. There are scenes at the final battle at the end. Captain America is trying to convince the Winter Soldier. He's trying to get him to remember who he is. And it doesn't really work. Long story short, the Winter Soldier remembers just enough to save Captain America's life at the end. But then he just kind of like walks away into the sunset and disappears. And then the movie ends with Captain America getting his hands on the Hydra files on the creation of the Winter Soldiers, and it's hinted that he is going to go after him. So the Winter Soldier could show up as a player in Avengers 2. I don't know if he will or not, but they definitely left that plot thread open.
Okay.
And then the here's where the Loki stuff comes in. The after credit sequence. We get it cuts to a Hydra base. I think it's implied it's in Europe. And they're like, oh my God. Like Hydra, like the main Hydra cell in Washington was just taken down. What are we gonna do? And the other then like the lead Hydra guy is like, oh, don't worry about it, you know. If we have to go it alone, we'll go it alone. We don't need Hydra. What we're working on is much more significant. And they've got Loki's scepter from the Avengers that they're running tests on. And then they say, but even more important, we need to prepare the twins. And then they cut to a scene of Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch in holding cells. Of course, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver will be in Avengers 2, Age of Ultron. So that is a definite lead up to Avengers 2. The Winter Soldier could make an appearance. He could not. That the possibility is always there. My major complaint about the movie would be the addition. It's not even the addition of the Falcon. The Falcon, Sam Wilson, he's a longtime ally of Captain America. He is in this movie. I don't necessarily have a problem with the Falcon being in it. I just have a problem with how they implemented it. Captain America meets Sam Wilson at the start of the film. And by the midway point, Wilson is ready to basically live and die for Captain America. And
my body is ready.
Exactly. No, it's exactly. And it's like, and it's like, look, all you had to do was, because it's been 2 years since the Avengers, so all you had to do was establish that Steve Rogers met Sam Wilson at some point in the past 2 years and that they've been friends for a decent amount of time. And then that makes Sam Wilson deciding to help Captain America in the middle of the movie seem more believable. It just seemed a bit forced. The Falcon's a fine character, nothing against him. I think his presence will make an already crowded Avengers 2 that much more crowded, but just in the context of this movie, I didn't mind him at all. I just wish that they had handled his introduction and alliance with Steve Rogers a bit more carefully instead of just kind of dropping him in there and just saying, hey, he's an ally of Captain America now, because that fell a bit flat. But it's a good action movie. It's a good action movie. It's a good superhero movie. And the aesthetic homages to 1970s political thrillers, they were just present enough to give this film its own identity and make it stand out from other Marvel movies. But it's still recognizable as a superhero movie, but at the same time, it has its own look and feel to it, which I think they did a pretty good job of. Hats off to Marvel. Thor 2 was pretty decent, and Captain America 2 was, I would thoroughly recommend. So okay, Iron Man 3 aside, they seem to be keeping things on the straight and narrow.
See, now, I thought Thor 2 was kind of meh. I mean, it wasn't bad. Don't get me wrong. I didn't dislike it. Just in comparison to the original, I thought it was kind of eh.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me.
I mean, it suffered again from an overemphasis of Loki. But at the same time, the best way to describe Thor 2 is it pleasantly killed a few hours of my day. I didn't feel like I was ripped off. I didn't feel like the movie shat in my brain. It was fine. You know, I wish we saw more Christopher Eccleston, but aside from that, yeah, it was a fine movie.
So now you mentioned you're talking about, these movies getting crowded.
Mm-hmm.
And going into, as we get closer to Avengers 2, that's something that I'm getting really concerned about.
Mm, yeah, no, definitely.
Cause I mean, we've got Batman versus Superman coming up in however many fucking years.
2015, I think, is the.
Yeah. So next year we'll have that and Avengers 2 later on this year.
Mm-hmm.
But both of these movies, and I thought Avengers 2 wasn't going to be as crowded as what it's going to be. So I thought it was safe when I was hearing about all these fucking heroes being in the DC movie. And I'm like, okay, well, at least, you know, we're not going to have to put up with that bollocks in the Marvel movie, but we are.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is just getting to be too much. I mean, it's hero spam, I think is what it is at this point. And I really don't see, I mean, unless they're wanting to do more spinoff films or something, I really don't see why.
I don't really see
the point to it.
Speaking of spinoffs, one more on Captain America reference. Hank Pym makes a cameo.
Oh God, fucking Ant-Man.
Yes. And they name drop Doctor Strange, although as far as I know, they don't have anyone on tap to play Doctor Strange, so that might have just been like a throwaway line. But, yeah, definitely the hero thing is gonna get ridiculous. Let's look at Avengers 1. We had Tony Stark, Captain America, the Hulk, and Thor. And then you have Black Widow and Hawkeye to round that out.
Yeah, I don't count them. I've got a bow and arrow. I do stuff. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. I mean, super assassin skills and skill with a weapon that's been outdated and rendered irrelevant for centuries. Not exactly on the same level as a guy who has his own power suit or, you know, the God of Thunder.
I mean, how does that even get past the resume?
I'm really good with a bow and arrow.
Yeah, I mean, how does that job interview go? Well, okay, so right now we've got slated a billionaire, genius, philanthropist, blah, blah, blah. We've got the God of Thunder. We've got a man who can, like, turn indestructible. And we've got a genetically engineered Superman. Mm-hmm. So what can you do?
Mm-hmm.
I'm really good at the bow and arrow. I see. I mean, okay, in the case of the Black Widow, I get it. Hey, baby, hired. Okay, I get it. You know, but turn around. Yes. Yes, you like the way my eyes feel on you, don't you?
Oh, my God. Yes. We're crossing into some dark territory.
Hired.
But,
so, yeah, I mean, I get it, but I'm good with a bow and arrow? What the fuck? I don't know.
But, okay, so you have, like, those six, and then we've got, I'm trying to think to Avengers 2, those six, add in Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. Potentially add in the Falcon. And then potentially add in a character or two from Guardians of the Galaxy. And potentially add in Ant-Man. I'm just gonna say, I'm willing to give Joss Whedon the benefit of the doubt and that maybe he can make it all work, but it's going to be exceptionally difficult to pull this off.
I mean, if it can work, Joss Whedon can make it work. I mean, at least it's not Zack Snyder, right? You know, so we've got that. And we've got good casting so far as it seems to be, these new people notwithstanding, you know, so we've at least got good casting.
Oh, Quicksilver looks like such a dweeb.
Yeah, you showed me him last night, and he looks just totally Of course, I mean, it could be that god-awful costume they've got him in, too, that looks like...
Hey, guys! Can I be an Avenger? Yeah, I made my own costume out of an old Under Armour shirt.
Exactly. I mean, it looks like either he made his own costume to get in, or his mother made it for him for trick-or-treating, and he somehow ended up, you know, stumbling into S.H.I.E.L.D.'s office or some shit. Like, well, fuck it, we hired the bow and arrow guy. Yeah, come on in, kid. You know... So it's too much. It's getting to be a little bit too much. I don't see I guess they're doing it for more spinoff potential or something, but anyways.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, that's just... Well, it's actually an interesting situation we've got here. Because Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch in the Marvel comics are actually the son and daughter of Magneto, the X-Men character, X-Men villain. And but they also have a long history in the Avengers. So apparently both Marvel Studios and Fox have co-rights to them. So we're going to get the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver in Avengers 2, but we're also getting Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver played by different actors in X-Men Days of Futures Past.
My head hurts.
So, I mean, that's...
Will they at least have better costumes than X-Men?
Actually, the X-Men costumes look worse.
Wow.
And Quicksilver in the X-Men, his X-Men costume is just like this black jumpsuit. And he's got these really stupid-looking goggles.
Wow.
So, I mean, yeah. The character is always just kind of kind of the Flash with angst anyway. The Flash of daddy issues because, you know, Magneto was never the most attentive father. Although that is interesting. I'm curious to see how they're going to handle Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch's backstory in Avengers 2. Because Fox has the rights to use the term mutant, and Fox has exclusive rights to Magneto. So I'm not sure how you get away with kind of establishing the backstory of Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver without mentioning at least Magneto.
They're probably not going to mention. Hi, we're here. We're going to do shit.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
I mean, you know, that's kind of where I see it going. Either that or they're going to just fabricate something that's completely out of continuity that's going to spark, you know, a few paragraphs of nerd rage from the two people who would really give a shit about these characters. You know, I would rather they actually not mention it because that's time taken away from the real Avengers doing real things.
The real Avengers.
So can we just not be bothered with – you know, these guys and just,
oh,
you know,
we're going to be bothered. We're going to be bothered with them. They're in there. So yeah, I mean, the big question I have going into Avengers 2 Age of Ultron is how will they reference Loki?
I don't know. I mean,
They found a way to shoehorn him into a Captain America movie.
I could almost see him kind of showing up and being maybe, honestly, like actually a good guy for a little bit. Possibly.
So add in another hero to the good guy side of things. Then.
Yeah, I could see them maybe. They're going to get tired of making him the villain all of the time. So I can kind of see them, to use the D&D lingo here, I could see them kind of making him more chaotic neutral.
Well, he
does what he wants.
He was sort of that in Thor 2. I mean, he wasn't the villain of Thor 2.
Well, he wasn't, but then at the end...
Maybe he kills Odin. Well, Anthony Hopkins has all but said that Odin's dead, so...
Yeah.
I mean, when that's cold, man, that's cold. I mean, kill your dad. I mean, come on. Be cool, Loki. Be cool.
All right, so moving on. What have we got next? You wanted to mention something about G.I. Joe, I believe, right?
Yes, I did want to mention something about G.I. Joe. It is G.I. Joe's 50th anniversary. The 2014 marks the 50th year. Well, okay, so it's not the 50th anniversary. It is the 50th year of the G.I. Joe franchise. I believe it debuted in 1964. 64 or 74. I'm terrible at math. Regardless.
It would probably be 64. So how is this, you know, milestone anniversary being celebrated?
Well, G.I. Joe, very important. It's a keystone brand for Hasbro. I would say more than any other toy, G.I. Joe put Hasbro on the map when it came to boys action figures. It really was the male answer to Barbie in a lot of ways. You can't really overestimate or overstate the importance G.I. Joe has had, not just for Hasbro, but kind of on the toy industry as a whole. And, of course, G.I. Joe was reinvented in 1982, I believe, into the Real American Hero line, where they, you know, the modern G.I. Joe characters were created, where we got Cobra, and that became a huge hit for Hasbro. It was G.I. Joe and Transformers were Hasbro's bread and butter for the longest time. And Hasbro celebrates the 50th anniversary, 50th year of G.I. Joe by disbanding the creative team behind it and putting the franchise on indefinite hiatus.
Dude, that is awesome. I mean, wait, what?
Yep. So far, from what I can gather, G.I. Joe sales have actually been in a steady decline for years now.
Well,
the Real American Hero dynamic just wasn't cutting it anymore. It was getting stale. Attempts to freshen it up, like the G.I. Joe Renegades show, were canceled after one season. It was this media franchise that was sort of lacking any direction. The live action movies made profits at the box office, but were just kind of terrible, all in all. So
the second one was watchable.
The second one was watchable, yes. But, you know, it just got to the point where this franchise had no direction. And apparently for the past 2 years, members of the G.I. Joe creative team had been working on projects and other toy lines. Like, some G.I. Joe guys were working in Star Wars toys. Some G.I. Joe guys were working in Transformers. So for the last 2 years, apparently, there hasn't been a lot coming out of G.I. Joe. And
maybe you ought to get that checked out.
But yeah. So G.I. Joe put on indefinite hiatus. It's not dead. It's not dead. I honestly don't see Hasbro just kind of killing G.I. Joe like this. They're probably going to work on ways to bring it back. But as of now, G.I. Joe only exists in IDW comic form and only exists through the Transformers Collectors Club and Fun Pub. So, for example, like Joe-Con, the G.I. Joe convention put on by Fun Pub, they'll still get exclusive figures and they'll still get club fiction. But as a media franchise and as a mainstream toy franchise, G.I. Joe is inactive and there is no set date for it to turn.
So maybe Joe-Con will get a Pirates versus Knight set with everybody in fucking regular uniform.
No, there'll be one guy.
And automatic weapons.
There'll be one guy with a pirate hat on, yeah. and
that'll be half-assed. He'll be in like a uniform with like some fucking, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean cosplay cap on, and it'll just look like he got drunk and wanted to be stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. I honestly never really got into G.I. Joe growing up. I had Transformers. What did I need G.I. Joe for?
Mm-hmm.
I never really cared, to be honest with you. And, you know, some people are probably like, oh my God. You know, I get it. I mean, I realize the importance of the franchise on the toy industry. And, you know, none of that's lost on me. I just never really cared for it. And the movies, the movies didn't do anything to change my mind. The first one was kind of shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Even by my standards, and it's bad if I'm saying it's shitty.
Now, this is the guy who defended Battlefield Earth and Street Fighter, so.
Oh, dude, you ain't seen nothing yet. the second one was watchable.
Mm-hmm.
But I just never really got into it. You know, when you first told me about this, I really thought, I can't be arsed to care. It's again, nothing against the franchise itself. I just never got into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe part of the reason Hasbro is pulling it, I don't know, culturally we're kind of turning into pansies and people view authority in the military with too much of a jaded eye these days, I think.
And the super patriotic real American hero might be on its way out.
Yeah, unfortunately. Too many people think that they're too smart and evolved and worldly for that. I don't think that respecting other countries and other cultures has to rule out or can't needs to rule out your own inherent patriotism in whatever you are. I think whatever you are, you should be proud of it. And but you know, that's not a prevailing mindset these days, and I think it's kind of translating just cultural changes not for the better in this, and I don't think they'll be able to bring it back anytime soon.
See, I'm going to disagree a bit on that because I think there is a way to reinvent G.I. Joe in a way that will get people talking about it.
G.I. Ho?
No.
The real America? Oh.
No.
Damn it.
No. You know what's really popular these days in the realm of video games? Call of Duty.
He said duty.
But no, seriously, though, if you reinvent G.I. Joe along the lines of a sort of Call of Duty franchise, like you find, like you look at those kids in their teens who are playing Call of Duty, and then you target their younger brothers who maybe aren't really able to play the games very well yet, but you know they still play with toys. So market G.I. Joe as sort of a Call of Duty-esque franchise, for a TV show, for a media franchise or comics. Rip off some Tom Clancy stories, dub them down for like some Rainbow Six stories, dub them down.
So hire Kevin Costner.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. And, you know, that's what I would do. There is a market for military themed entertainment today.
Oh, there is.
It's just that I think the real American hero thing, it's just one of those things that has not stood the test of time. And I say as someone, I like Cobra. I like Cobra. I like the real American hero setup. But honestly, it has not aged as well as, say, the Autobots and Decepticons have.
No.
I mean, the Transformers premise is something that has been reinvented over countless franchises, over countless reboots and franchises. It's something that you can always put a new twist on, yet every time they try to rehash real American hero in some form with G.I. Joe versus Cobra, it always just sort of feels the same, and it just sort of always feels like we've been there and done that. I'm not saying get rid of Cobra completely, but I'm saying try something else. Go in a Call of Duty style direction. And then if that works, if that gets the franchise back on its feet, if that starts to drive sales again, then, you know, bring back, like, the 80s homage, you know, series. Bring back the Cobra Commander commemorative toy. Then you can start bringing back all these classic characters that people love once you've successfully reinvented the franchise.
Fair enough. And, you know, you might have a point. I mean, I don't know. I know that I heard something the other day that in the latest Call of Duty game, I'm pretty sure it's Call of Duty, you'll be able to play as the Predator. So
like the alien Predator?
Right.
That fought Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Right, yeah, yeah. Okay. And so I mean that notwithstanding, you know, that shows that there can be kind of absurd crossovers with this whole Call of Duty thing now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe some kind of a Call of Duty Joe edition, if they were to, you know, develop a game along those lines, that might be kind of interesting if they did it right. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I almost think the FPS audience may not be the best place to try to do something like that just because they seem to be so in their own habit and ritual that variation may to that extent may not be welcomed. But
you don't go after them though. You go after their younger brothers and cousins. Like the little kids. Sure. The little kids, like say 7 to 10 years old, who see their older brothers playing Call of Duty, and G.I. Joe is something that kind of taps into that same market space, but it's something that they can really engage in. Because maybe they can't play the games fully yet.
I gotcha.
So that's what I'm saying in terms of Call of Duty thing. Like, you're not going to go after the teenagers and 20-year-olds. Like, there are definitely there are teenage collectors. There are 20 collectors in their 20s. But you're not going to go after your average teenager or 20-year-old with G.I. Joe. That's just not going to happen. But you can go after the kids who look up to their older brothers and cousins and see them playing Call of Duty, and then G.I. Joe is sort of their way to engage in that until they get old enough to play Call of Duty.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Because, I mean, Call of Duty is doing it's doing gangbuster numbers in the video game world. In fact, I think I see Call of Duty-themed Mega Block sets. So,
really?
Yeah. So, Call of Duty is something that it's got a lot of traction right now. It's something that I think it's the best way to successfully sort of market a military themed product right now. And that's the direction G.I. Joe needs to go in. It might mean dumping Cobra for just a couple years just to get things fresh and to get things back on their feet, but it's something that I think they really need to look into. What do they have to lose, though? I mean, what's the downside to taking that risk and trying to reinvent the brand? That it dies? It's already died.
Well, there's the monetary loss.
Ah, there is the monetary loss, yeah. But, you know, you do it limited, I guess. You do it small scale. You roll out a few special releases, focus group them to make sure that kids are into them, see how it does in the marketplace. There are ways to do it so that by the time it reaches markets, you're guaranteed to not take too much of a bath on it.
Yeah. I don't know. It might could work, but for now, it would seem G.I. Joe is gone bye-bye, mm-hmm. at least temporarily. Would you like to move on to the main event?
Yeah, the main event for the evening. What makes this a very special episode?
Besides me and Mike being retarded.
So, why don't you tell us about the latest news from Blizzard Entertainment and World of Warcraft Warlords of Draenor?
Well, so basically, anyone who's listened to our show at any length already knows, you know, probably the basics of what's going on here. I'll just go over it in very broad strokes for those who aren't. Warlords of Draenor, the latest upcoming World of Warcraft expansion with, 50% more Warcraftiness. Evidently it's going into its first round of alpha testing. Within the last, 24, 48 hours, there's been a lot of information coming through regarding some specifics of the game that go anywhere from, the lore to the item roster to the map for the expansion, to the new game features and the game mechanics that have been changed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, me and Mike, we're not ones too much to kind of dissect and pick apart game mechanics. I mean, there's better informational sources than us for that. So we're going to let them kind of do their thing. You might hear us rant now and then about things that affect us. He plays a warrior. I play a paladin. So you might hear us rant a little bit about that and things in general. But in terms of gameplay mechanics specifics, we're not going to touch too heavily on that.
Mm-hmm.
What we will discuss are, again, the broad strokes, kind of, our general impressions of what we've seen, which is, we reviewed all of the information, the nitpicky and the non-nitpicky. Especially some of the lore stuff, which is kind of what him and I gravitate a little bit more to, at least recently, mm-hmm. than the actual gameplay itself. So now, Mike, you're more of the lore nerd than I am to a degree. What I found to be pretty humorous, and we mentioned this on a previous show, but Valen, the leader of the Draenei, who are a faction within the Alliance, this is the first expansion where he gets to do shit.
He did.
That was one of the big things going into this. Oh my god, Draenei! Valen's gonna do shit! Oh my god, he's so badass. I bet he could, because he's supposed to be like,
the supreme holy
power.
Yeah, he's like the most divinely powered individual in the universe, essentially. And that's not me exaggerating. Within the lore of the Warcraft game, he is probably one of the most divinely powered individuals in the game. And
He was introduced.
He did.
He was introduced in the Burning Crusade expansion years and years ago. I think it was 2006, I want to say, the Burning Crusade came out.
Yeah. Yep.
2006. So he was introduced in 2006. Since Burning Crusade, we've had Wrath of the Lich King, we've had Cataclysm, and we've had Mists of Pandaria. And Valen has done jack squat through those three expansions. And so Warlords of Draenor comes out, a heavy emphasis on the Draenei. We're all excited. Valen's gonna do things. And
Valen's gonna do things. We're gonna get all kinds of Valen lore. We're gonna see him in action. It's gonna be fucking great. He's dead.
He dies, yes.
He dies.
So, he's dead. The number one contender, I guess, to replace him as leader of the Draenei is a new character created for Warlords of Draenor. She appears to be a Draenei paladin named Yarel, I think?
I guess.
Y-R-E-L is how the name is.
Y-R-E-L. Yarel? I think it might be like Yarel.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's a tricky one.
That girl.
Yeah. And in terms of lore that's been revealed from this alpha launch, there's not much actually. All the text that we have is just sort of that generic banter that NPCs say when you're on quests.
Right.
So nothing's really breaking the story wide open here. Nothing's really revealing huge parts of it, but we do glean that Yarel is going back to Azeroth, which is the main world that World of Warcraft takes place on. So that's what makes me think that she's primed to replace Valen, because Warlords of Draenor takes place in the past. So it's not as simple as her simply coming to another planet. It's a time travel thing.
And it's an alternate reality, basically, is what it amounts to.
And Blizzard was very adamant, saying, you know, we're going to keep the time stream separate. We're not going to have a lot of crossover aside from, you know, the actions of the players. So for them to take a character that exists in this time stream, in this Draenor time stream, and move her into the main Azeroth time stream says to me that she's going to be the new leader of the Draenei.
I'm actually going to have to correct you a little bit on that. Blizzard actually has – I mean, they've gone – you know, they've gone to extremes to try to portray this not as a time travel thing. It is a parallel universe, an alternate reality, an alternate timeline, not a past timeline. And they've said that now while what has been in the past remains in the past for, you know, Azeroth and what has already happened in the lore up to that point – that the events of Warlords of Draenor will very much impact the future of Azeroth.
In a lot
of different ways.
It will impact the future of Azeroth, but I'm just saying that like, they made it a point to say, for example, that Bladefist, the orc warrior Bladefist, for example, he exists in both the main timeline and in this past Draenor timeline. They made a big point of saying, don't worry, we're not going to have them cross paths. We're not going to implode the universe. So but to me, that says that they're not that if they're taking a character and moving her into the main time stream, it says to me that they have big plans for her just beyond Warlords of Draenor. And that's what makes me think that she's going to be the Draenei leader.
I think she is too. I mean, she was one of the ones that they kind of featured at BlizzCon going into it. You know, they're like, hey, we're having this badass Draenei chick. She's a paladin. Woot. And, you know, all this other shit. And they made it a point to introduce her to show, you know, and the female, despite the April Fool's joke, The female Draenei character model has not been completed yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but they showed this early. Mm-hmm. So that means they want us to take notice of her for a reason. And, you know, they want us to become familiar with her for a reason. And this information that has been data mined from the code from the alpha, which I have not been able to grab the alpha client yet to kind of play around in it. When I can get my hands on it, I will, and, you know, play around in it. We can discuss that on the show a little bit. I don't have the capability to do any kind of data mining, so it'd be me going around in the world just kind of saying what I thought of what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But that notwithstanding, you know, they wanted us to take note of this character for a reason. And I, you know, finding out that Valen gets nixed just when we think he's going to do something, you know, it makes sense. It definitely makes sense. Though I would really like to see Valen's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
So does everyone remember that time when Valen, you know, there was this one time he got in this big fight and then, you know, everything was going crazy and then he died. Oh, wait, that was earlier today. Fuck. You know.
Yeah. And you're going to, you just have all the alliance leaders and they're just like standing around kind of awkwardly. Like you got Varian Wrynn. He's at like the buffet, like yeah. Just kind of like awkwardly kind of going through the hors d'oeuvres.
Fucking a dwarf pulling out a flask, taking a swig from it every now and then and trying to hide it.
Yeah. or they could go in a different route and they have Varian Wrynn give a speech. In all my travels, I never met a soul who was more human.
Though, I mean, you know, it would probably be ruined because Thrall would show up. And things being what they are, I'm sure he'd probably end up giving a eulogy. Even though he's been Horde, he was the leader of the Horde, but it's, you know, Metzen's writing and creative influence, so.
Yeah, yeah. We also know from, you know, this quest dialogue that has been data mined that Thrall is gonna be there and doing things and, you know, yeah.
He does not go away.
He never leaves.
And he keeps, like, thanking us for things that we don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
For him.
The game, like, you know, the game insists on making us, like, help him, and I don't want to help Thrall. I'm tired of Thrall. Okay, yes, I realize he was, like, Chris Metzen's pet project when Metzen took over, like, creative duties at Blizzard, but, God, I'm so sick of it. I'm honestly a bit shocked that the temporary loading screen isn't just a naked Thrall in a bearskin rug.
Again, if that happens, so help me God, I'm fucking blaming you.
If it happens, you can't blame me, because if it happens, it's, you know, would you honestly say you weren't expecting it?
No, sadly I couldn't. I really couldn't.
So, you know, it's just, I'm just sick of Thrall. I'm sick of his face. I'm sick of him being here, honestly. It's just so, his character reached, his character arc reached a natural conclusion in the Cataclysm expansion. He was forced. He wasn't entirely forced in Pandaria, because you could say that he had to confront his mistakes in Garrosh.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe in Pandaria a bit less of him would have been fine, but, you know, we're getting to the point now where keeping Thrall around, it's just to appease Metzen's, well, his ego, or maybe he's just so blinded by his love for his own creation that he can't see the bigger picture. But it's just to the point where Thrall is this ever-present entity. He doesn't change. He doesn't leave. I'm just sick of him. I'm sick. Maybe this is my alliance bias, but I'm sick of seeing Thrall. I'm an alliance player. I don't relate to Thrall's story at all. He's just, he's the Horde's character, and good for the Horde, but we've seen enough of him.
Well, I will say, from a creative standpoint, now I'm not saying that this may not be the entire reason for Warlords of Draenor, but, you know, he is going, basically the idea is for him to meet his father. And so you can expect to see him, I guess. I don't see why Alliance players really should have to be bothered with him, though. I mean, that should be, if you're interested in seeing that, roll a Horde tune. You know, you get a free 90, make a Hordey if you play Alliance. And if you play Horde, then you're already good to go. So, you know, it's whatever.
I mean, I honestly can't say though that I honestly think that a big part of this was for Metzen to justify more Thrall content.
Yeah. Hey, let's go back to Draenor so Thrall can meet his dad. Everyone wants to see that, right?
Totally. No, I will say this, though, kind of stepping away from lore for just a second, and we can go back to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to say it while it's kind of fresh in my head. Now, game mechanics-wise, mm-hmm. Just very broad-stroking it, Giggity. They are doing a massive overhaul to almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Cataclysm, they revamped the aesthetics of the game to a large extent. In Warlords of Draenor, they're giving the game mechanics and abilities the same treatment. And I think it should probably have better results. They're getting rid of a lot of redundant abilities that kind of could be combined with something else. Because over the years, what they've been doing, they want to keep that feeling of your character getting stronger and more powerful. So they give you shit. They give you shit and they give you shit. Until, you know, my action bar, when I would play, you know, as a tank, I probably had 20 to 30 different fucking buttons on my action bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I would only use maybe 10 of them mm-hmm. on a regular basis. But those other, you know, however many, 20, when you need them, you need them. And you need them right the fuck now. So, you know, you feel this need to kind of have them there. And they're trimming down a lot of that stuff. They're, you know, we've mentioned the item squish, as it's being called, where they just kind of pare down the numbers.
Yeah, you know, we don't get like tens of millions of damage points.
Right. And it's funny that they think that these huge numbers are fine for Diablo when you're DPSing, mm-hmm. but not for WoW. And the only reason that they've really substantially given for it is that to help make it easier to understand. I have no problem understanding numbers in the millions. I'm not retarded. Well, okay, that's arguable, but I can understand numbers in the millions when I see them pop up on my screen. Say, you hit him this hard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, mm-hmm. I get it. And that being said, you know, with each iterative expansion after, you know, vanilla World of Warcraft back in 2004 it launched, they've had to make the gear exponentially better
mm-hmm.
from the threshold of one expansion to the next and so on and so forth. What essentially they've done is they've gone back, they've retooled everything as if this were the first expansion since vanilla. And the numbers on the gear have just gone up steadily, not dramatically and exponentially since then, just very, very incrementally. And so you'll see that exponential climb from, you know, vanilla to Pandaria up into Draenor.
Yeah.
You'll see that spike from, you know, Pandaria to Draenor, but not in anything before that.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, when, you know, they've shown a lot of the new gear that you'll be getting in Pandaria. And I'm looking at it because that's one of the things I always get excited about. You know, I'll go in and look at the gear and I'll be like, oh man, I can't wait to get this. Oh man, that's so fucking badass. And I went to look at it and I had no frame of reference for anything.
I don't know how strong this is.
Yeah, I don't know what this will do for me. This is gear. And I kind of came away from just going like, aw, well, I guess that's a thing that happens. Fuck all.
Oh, there's,
you know.
I also want to talk a bit as a warrior. They're taking away a lot of my abilities that generate rage.
And if, as a result of generated rage.
Yes. I mean, a quick recap for those who don't play. If you're a warrior in World of Warcraft, your ability to use your attacks is based on rage. And you get rage as you fight, and you have abilities that also increase your rage. And if you don't have a lot of rage, then you're the number of abilities you can use is decreased significantly. Well, Blizzard is removing a lot of abilities that generate rage. And I want to trust them, man. I really want to trust them. But I don't know. Like, they're going to have to find a way to compensate for that.
All right. I get you. I get you. And we touched on this a little bit last night because I heard you going through the patch notes. And I heard your voice take on that distinctive irritated tone. And you're like, how am I going to generate rage? I'm like, sounds like you're doing a fucking fine job to me. But, you know, I get it. And they've taken away some shit from my spec and class, Retribution Paladin that kind of has me scratching my head like, okay, you know, well, what the fuck am I going to do for this or that? The only thing I can really say at this point is what you would say to me if the roles were reversed, and that's wait and see. You know, this is alpha information. This goes without saying, but I'm going to say it, not so much for you, but for people who are just listening to this and go on and see the patch notes like, oh, what the fuck? Everything is subject to change. You know, there are things that will be changed, tweaked, added, removed between now and final release, and incrementally in between that will change this. Secondly, even that now is something. Even if everything stays the way it is right now, let's not jump to any conclusions as to how our characters will play until we actually get to play them in this environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even know what our fucking gear is going to look like. You know, we're going to log in and see our stats and be like, what the fuck?
Nah, I don't care. I don't care what the gear looks like. Transmog solved that for me a long time.
Well, no, I'm not saying what it looks like. I'm saying the stats on it.
Well, you did technically say the word what it looks like.
Well, what the stats look like. Fine. God damn it, fool. You know, cause when I went and I looked at that gear, I'm like, you know, I have no frame of reference for any of this. I don't know what the fuck this means. You know, I see numbers. I have no context with which to frame them.
Mm-hmm.
And all right. So moving on. And what is normally for me is one of the high points of an expansion or even a new patch just became, okay, that's a thing. Moving on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a little bummed about that, but I get it. You know, I'm not angry about it. It's just whatever. But yeah, they've trimmed down a lot of abilities. They've tweaked a lot of things to try to make the characters play a little smoother. Inquisition, a really annoying, ability of Rep Paladins, which is basically a button that you hit to not lose DPS in a fight. They're getting rid of that, and they're getting rid of similar abilities for other classes as well. So basically all around what they're trying to do is, you know, streamline everything, try to remove a lot of the extra bloat, in many aspects.
I do like,
abilities.
I do like that. Going through each class's, talents and seeing which talents and which abilities are redundant, merging talents and abilities, compensating with glyphs. Kind of just trying to streamline the whole thing so you don't have 30 buttons on your action bar. And so I agree with the sentiment there. I like what they're doing. I'm still optimistic. It's just one of those things where I'm kind of like, I really hope you guys know what you're doing. Cause I'm trusting you. Don't let me down, guys.
I think they do. And I'll tell you why. Because I mean, they've been talking about this since Cataclysm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people say, well, this is a problem and that's a problem. And the reply from Blizzard would always be, well, yeah, we know it's a problem. We want to fix it, but we want to do it right. And we will fix it, but it will be the point in time when we know exactly how to fix it and have this fix be something that's, you know, up to our standard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're finally getting shit that was promised to us, you know, 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so this says, you know, they've thought this through very thoroughly. Perhaps maybe in some cases, one of the flaws may be that they might overthink some of it. But, you know, they're finally getting around to doing it. They're getting rid of all these abilities that they've given us simply to make us feel like that we got something. Because when you level, you want things. And they're kind of compensating for that with Draenor by – instead of giving us abilities every level, they're giving us, you know, what they call perks,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, an ability that you have will do more damage or enhancing an existing ability, something like that. And they're randomizing it between levels 91 to 99. I think that's a pretty cool approach to it. It's to create that feeling of your character getting stronger steadily as you go through the content, while at the same time, you know, keeping you from just getting shit on your action bar that you're never going to use or maybe only use situationally.
Yeah.
And removing it two or three expansions later.
Yeah, I mean, for all of my, you know, wringing of hands over seeing some of my abilities get taken away, a lot of the warrior notes said stuff like losing disarmed. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I don't care because I've got disarmed on my action bar because you know, that one time out of 10, I might actually need it, but I rarely use it. So, right. Yeah, okay. So I all in all, I appreciate what they're doing. I get what they're doing. I just hope that they're going to find a way to compensate for losing some rage-generating abilities on my end. I don't expect that they'd take them away if they didn't have a plan, but, you know.
No, Mike, you're going to fucking deal with it.
I still got Dragon.
You'll deal with it, you're going to like it.
I still got Dragon Rorsal still out DPS you.
For now.
No, Dragon War ain't getting nerfed. I'm surprised it hasn't been it's been nerfed kind of, but not nearly to the extent I thought it would be. It's still a beast.
Subject to change, sir. Subject to change.
You keep telling yourself that, you know, and then they're gonna suddenly just remove Divine Storm out of the game, and then we'll see who's laughing.
You know what? I'm surprised my character hasn't been removed from the game. So, if I expect a kick in the balls and I get a slap in the face, I'm happy.
With Ghostcrawler gone, maybe there won't be that raging hate boner for paladins.
I don't think it was Ghostcrawler, honestly, and I think he did a good job. He got a lot of shit for stuff that he didn't always have everything to do with.
Mm-hmm.
I know I always got the feeling, and he has said a couple times, or at least implied, that he really didn't care for rep paladin players, because maybe some of us are a bit more vocal or whatever. And I've heard that rep pally players are kind of stereotyped to be.
Oh, you guys aren't worse than Death Knights.
Well, we're kind of stereotyped to be like ignorant, drunk rednecks. And I qualify on maybe one and a half to two of those, but I'm not ignorant. And so, you know, hey, stereotypes exist for a reason. I have no problem owning up to my share of it, but I don't know. It's one of those things we're going to have to wait and see. I don't mind waiting to see the final product to make my decisions. I'm going to try to get in the beta for this as well. And, you know, I'm not going to play through all of it. I'm not going to level to 100, but I'm going to play through maybe, you know, from 90 to 92 or 93.
Yeah, good luck getting into that beta.
I got into the Cataclysm beta. I got into the Pandaria beta.
Did you get into Cataclysm beta?
Yeah, I did.
Because there's that flood incident.
I did, yeah. No, when I finally got internet after the flood, you know, when we moved and everything, I got into the beta. I got to play it for fuck all of a week.
I remember that, because I so want to get into beta. Why won't you give me beta, Blizzard? And then they give it to you.
Right. But, yeah, I was in the Pandaria beta, and I went in there and fucked around a little bit with it. So, you know, when I get into this one, if I do, I'll do the same thing. I'll go in there and putter around a little bit and, you know, see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll see. Lore-wise, going back to that a little bit, the only thing really of a plot point that's kind of referenced in here that we haven't really touched on is evidently the Iron Horde, who is this band of orcs that Garrosh Hellscream has gone and rounded up to go fuck shit up. They've got this giant fuck-all cannon, and they're presumably mounting it on a warship to attack Shatrath, which is one of the major metropolitan areas, or the major metropolitan area of Draenor. And, you know, a lot of the discussion is about going to stop that. That's pretty much really all that's been divulged so far. Pretty much lore-wise, all that's been shown has been, like Mike said earlier, bits and pieces that NPCs will say over the course of a quest, and it seems like to be what's been shown is one string of a plot line where, you know, a little bit of interesting information is given out, but not a whole hell of a lot. You know, we'll see what comes of it. I'm sure there will probably be some more shit coming out about this over the next week or two. And, you know, even beyond that is more things are found out. But, you know, definitely a lot of stuff. They have put the map up, which is comprised of pretty much, you know, melded together mini-map screenshots. And everything looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, you know, if you've played Burning Crusade, They, of course, couldn't fuck with it too much.
It still had to fit the general geography of Outlands, essentially.
Yeah, it does, except, you know, they took the liberty to say, okay, well, Outlands was Draenor blown up. This is Draenor not blown up.
And so Hellfire Peninsula, for example, is actually a lush forest.
Right, you're right. They have added land. They've added, you know, some land here mm-hmm. and there to say, okay, well, you know, this was blown away and that was blown away. But they didn't take more liberty than what would seem logical with it. Well, actually, you know, if the planet blew up, I wouldn't even think Outlands would exist. So technically, but whatever. For their purposes and what they were trying to do with it, I think they've done a good job. I've examined the map at some detail. And I think it looks pretty cool. I like a lot of the zones, the way they're looking. It doesn't look like it's going to have that gross Burning Crusade feeling that I didn't like when you go into these zones. And I know a lot of WoW fans are like, oh my God, you hate Burning Crusade. Yeah, I totally fucking hate
Burning Crusade. Yeah, no, Jack and I are not fans of Burning Crusade. That Zangrimmar Marsh and those
– Zangrimmarsh, yeah.
Zangrimmarsh and those plant – that plant parts quest – good God.
I liked the zone of Zangrimmarsh.
Oh, that was the worst of the whole thing. It was the worst of it. It was the worst of the whole thing.
Hellfire Peninsula for me was the worst because it seemed to go on forever.
And it was just barren.
There was nothing to see. Except there was this one part because a lot of times I'd play with my sound turned off. Because I'd be listening to music or whatever, and I'd be sitting there, my screen would be shaking while I was, like, you know, opening a beer, lighting a cigarette or something, and I'd see my screen shaking, and I thought it was just me. I'm like, well, what the fuck is that? And then all of a sudden, I'm dead when one of these big fuckball fell reavers came by and stomped my ass.
They have these giant fell reavers. You get to Hellfire Peninsula when you're around level 60, mm-hmm. and they've got these giant fell reavers that kind of patrol Hellfire Peninsula. And they're at such a level that if they find you at level 60, you don't have a chance in hell.
No. No, you're dead.
You're dead.
Before you even shit yourself, you're dead.
So, but you know, yeah, like Jack said, the ground shakes and you hear them coming, so you should be able to get out of the way. But, you know, if you're like Jack and you're playing inebriated and listening to music, then they tend to sneak up on you.
You know, it's amazing how stealthy something the size of a three-story building can be. You don't realize it until you're in the situation. But fuckers are like ninjas, man. They will sneak up on you, and they will stomp your ass flat in the ground every time.
Oh, speaking of ninjas, I saw a ninja cow in-game yesterday.
Oh, really?
Well, obviously not a rogue Tauren. Taurens being a bull cow-like race that comprises one of the member races of the Horde. But they can't play as rogues. But I was in Goldshire yesterday, and there's this little the little thing pops up. Lion's Pride Inn is under attack. So, all right, I go to Lion's Pride Inn. A Horde player, you know, that pops up if a Horde player attacks an Alliance location. So I go to Lion's Pride Inn, you know, go upstairs into one of the rooms upstairs, and I see this Tauren, level 11 Tauren, and he's just in the corner of a room, and you can tell by his positioning that he's trying very hard to not be seen.
Nice.
He's this giant cow person trying very hard not to be seen. You know, he came in, he killed like a level 2 NPC, and then he's like, I'm just going to fade into the scenery.
You'll never know I was here.
So I've got a level 90 character with some decent raiding gear. So, you know, level 11 Tauren is nothing. So I just look at him for about 3 seconds. He looks at me for 3 seconds. And then I threw a sword at his head.
And he's probably like, he doesn't see me. I'm invisible. Oh, shit. We're dead.
Yep. Yep. It was just one of the funniest things I've seen in that game. It's like because Taurens are among one of the biggest races in the game. So, you know, they're not one to blend in. This Tauren guy just, you know, in the middle of, like, an inn is just like, I will blend into the shadows.
I mean, if you wanted to hide in the inn, at least go into the basement or one of the bedrooms.
Nah, you can't go into the basement because there are class trainers down there who will mess you up.
Oh, okay. At least go upstairs or something. Jeez.
Yeah. So that is Mike's antidotes from the World of Warcraft for this week.
But yeah, you know, we'll be getting more news on this, you know, over the next couple weeks probably.
Mm-hmm.
Anything interesting, you know, this is like I said, you know, what we've gone over tonight regarding this is very broad strokes, very condensed. And it's because, frankly,
we don't want to bore you guys going into detail over, you know, like nitty gritty game mechanics.
Yeah, and it's boring even to us. I mean, we skim over it and we only have so long for a show. We're not going to bore ourselves or you with everything, but that's it in a nutshell. And anything interesting that crops up between now and then, you know, we'll pass along as we get it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Indeed. Indeed. And I think that'll do it for this week. You know, we covered a wide variety of topics. Captain America, of course, the Avengers, the good Transformers convention exclusive, and then the not so good Transformers convention exclusive. You know, and on that point, I just want to repeat, BotCon, it's sad when you're getting outdone by a exclusive that only exists as a dick joke.
Hey, never underestimate the power of a dick joke, sir.
I mean, come on, guys. You had a pirate versus knight theme. All you had to do was make some pirates and knights, and apparently that was asking too much. But anyway, this is Mike for Jack signing off for episode 9 of Basically a Geek Show. Catch us on iTunes, on YouTube, on Spreaker, Stitcher, and Podomatic. Night, everybody.
Night.